last week was to consider sitting or standing for Kiddush and Havdalah, but I didn't even make it to Havdalah, and like we filled up 2 pages of stuff about sitting or standing for Kiddush. It was way more complicated. I knew that there are different like ways that people did this, but it was much, much more complicated than I thought it was. So it's a fascinating topic. There's a bunch of different reasons why one would be inclined to sit or to stand for Kiddush. So the way that we'll do this is we'll look through some of the options, some of the sources, which go through why you would stand or sit, and then we will consider what the different minhagim actually are. What kinds of different things do people do? And as we'll see, several other aspects of the construct of Kiddush, in terms of what we say, are included. They sort of get wrapped up in this discussion of whether you're supposed to stand or sit. So we'll have to touch on some of those as well. We'll see how much of it, given how much time we have.
Are you going to cover Kiddush for both the Erev as well as for the day?
Yeah, so I will touch on it. As we'll see, the reasons... Some reasons apply better during the day than others, but that doesn't mean that people don't have all kinds of... There's every possible variation of minhag here and beyond. Things that you've never imagined. So we'll see what's going on. So why would you sit? Let's start from that perspective. We're making Kiddush. Obviously, it's comfortable to sit at the table. But why would you be inclined to sit? So as we'll see, there are two, basically one very strong and one sort of other applied halachic reason why a person would have to sit. The first possibility, as we'll see here in source one, is raised by Tosfot, and Tosfot is asking a question about the fact that normally speaking, one person making a bracha, let's say for Birkat Hanan, and if I make a bracha to exempt another person, it's not so easy to do. Like we have two people, one of them wants to eat an apple, and the other one doesn't, the other person can't really make a bracha to fulfill the bracha for the person that wants to eat the apple. You can do that with mitzvah, you can't always do it with things that you want to eat, unless everybody wants to eat together, and then you can have one person make the bracha for everyone. But Tosfot is concerned with how do we identify a unit of people, that all want to come together to fulfill this bracha, and so the bracha will work for them. And his solution basically is that if you have everybody sitting together at a table, you can see clearly that we're all together, this is one unit, we're getting together now to fulfill Kiddush, to fulfill the bracha, to fulfill Havdalah. He starts with Havdalah, actually, and he moves to, he doesn't really actually mention Kiddush, but this is applied to Kiddush. And so this is what we'll see here. Valtzarech iun ktsat mahavdala. I have a little bit of I have to analyze a little bit our practice that we have here for havdala. Shanu mavdilin vaomdin. The practice around wherever Tosfot was in France was that we make havdala when we're standing. I mean, this would be the springboard for the discussion about havdala, which we're not going to do now. But that people make havdala when they're standing. Hey, achanu potrin ze etze miyainu mihavdala. How exactly is it that we exempt each other from the brachot of the wine, from the brachot of Havdalah, since we're not sitting, we're not reclining, we're not unified as a unit? It's not clear how everybody is cohering together as a unit to make Havdalah. V'shema yesh lomar mitoch shekovin atzman kedei latzet yedei Havdalah, and there's a specific issue with the bracha for, you know, the wine or something like that. But since perhaps everybody has intention to unify together into one group, into one setting in order to fulfill Havdalah, perhaps that will work for everything else, for the bracha on the wine, for the bracha on the spices, for the bracha on the candle. These things are not really part of the mitzvah of Havdalah. The make a bracha on the spices is not really part of the essential requirements of Havdalah. If you don't have spices, then you simply don't make a bracha on spices. That's not going to stop you from making Havdalah. So how exactly is one person going to make a bracha for everyone? Because maybe we all have intention. But Tosfot says that's not the ideal. Ulekach na'evetov l'mavdil v'gam l'shomim sheyeshvu b'shat Havdalah. Therefore, it is fitting and good, it's ideal for the person who's making Havdalah and everyone that's listening to him to sit during the time for Havdalah, because then it appears, then you can see that this is a set sitting, and the one making Havdalah can then effectively discharge everyone from their obligations. So the idea here is that sitting together shows that this is a unit of people, we're all doing this thing together, one person is doing it for everyone, but you may need to sit in order to create what Tosfos is calling a kviut, an established setting so that we can all do this together. So if we apply this to Kiddush as well, this would be a good reason why you should have to sit during Kiddush. Because when we're sitting, this creates this setting which allows one person to make the brachas for everyone. Yeah.
I read this that it's more important that everybody is doing the same thing as opposed to whether it be the issue of standing or sitting. In other words, so it appears that you're all kulana biyachad, that you're all doing it together as opposed to whether it's more important to do standing or sitting.
Well, so you're right. The bottom line, Tosfot says, is that the reason why it works for us to have Havdalah while standing is because everyone has intention to be together. But he nevertheless says at the end, ideally it's better for everyone to sit. Either because, you know, maybe people aren't paying attention. Mm-hmm. The Mishnah Berurah has a discussion. It's okay for people to stand, as we'll see at the end of the day. But if you have somebody that's like wandering around and they're making Kiddush and he's not really like, you know, we don't know that mm-hmm. he's with us, he doesn't really, then that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Just because he's in the room and he may hear it, he may say Amen at the end, but he's not part of the unit.
Right.
He's got to be part of the unit. So probably, you're right. The Tosfos says, bottom line, if you're standing, it's okay. But if you're sitting, then you automatically have this sort of setting. And maybe mm-hmm. that's important. Okay. That's one reason why we might have a good reason to sit. The second reason actually crops up in source 4. It's in the second paragraph. I started bolded it. There's two sections here. So this is and the Kolbo. The Kolbo wrote that ideally, you're right, somebody should have stood up. We're not going to talk about one, we can see. We're honoring the king. We'll get to explain what exactly that means in a minute. However, there is a halachic concept called Kiddush b'makom se'uda. There's a rule for Kiddush that the Kiddush is supposed to be made in the place where you eat your meal. And so this is the reason why you don't just make Kiddush and Shul in one place and then go home and without eating anything, without whatever. It's a much more complicated discussion. And then go home and be able to eat your meal without making Kiddush again. The Kiddush has to be sort of appended to the meal, to the food. And the Kolbo says that as a result of this, he takes this to an extreme. Not everybody takes it to this extreme. That perhaps, even though maybe we would have had good reasons to stand up, lefisha ein kiddush al b'makom seuda, since kiddush is only supposed to be recited wherever you eat, sarich leshev, diikayim v'yate mechzik chucha v'itul. So you have to sit, because that shows that you're in exactly the spot where you're about to eat your meal. I mean, not everybody takes it this far. If you're standing at the table, you're also right where you're going to eat your meal. But the Kolbo seems to assume that it's better in terms of having a continuity between your Kiddush and your meal, that everybody is sitting. You're sitting literally in the spot you're going to sit in, the seat you're going to sit in when you eat your meal. What about standing up and sitting down? So this already gets into this issue of how to try and make a compromise here. He says standing up and sitting down would look like silly. You know, if you're standing up and then you sit down, and if you stand up again, and you start doing aerobic exercises. He says it's not appropriate to start one way and finish the other way. It looks like chucha ve'italula or atlula, whatever. It looks like a mockery to do that.
But I think maybe the mockery is because it sounds like you're diminishing some aspects versus others. In other words, when you sit down, you're diminishing the kavod of what you're about to say. In other words, you're standing up. Well, why should we be standing up? Why should you be sitting down if everything's supposed to be at the same time?
It could be. For whatever reason, he feels like that's not appropriate to start one way and go the other way. We'll see. Definitely not everybody agrees with this. But he says if you're going to have a counterbalance, right, on the one hand, I have good reasons to stand. On the other hand, I just by way of demonstration, the other reason why you might want to sit is this notion of Kiddush b'makom seuda. So we basically have two halachic reasons which are sort of propelling us to sit as opposed to stand. One of them, again, is this idea that Tosfot writes that it's better in terms of creating a set group of people who are all going to do the Kiddush together. And the other, which is raised by the Kolbo, is that maybe This way, it's a better accomplishment of the concept of Kiddush B'Makom Suda, making Kiddush wherever you eat. Good. Why would we choose to stand? So that already is the less common sense reason, right? Because, you know, if I, you know, had to choose, if it was just up to me, I'd probably sit because it's more comfortable, and why would I stand? But why would you choose to stand? What reasons would drive you to do that? So if we look in source 2, it's not readily apparent from here, but we'll see how people treat it. Source 2 says that it's very important to say Vayichulu. In Shul, we say this, the Mishnah Brura brings down that maybe a person should say it three times. In Shul, we say it twice. We say it one more time in Kiddush. Vayichulu Shamayim Va'aretz V'chol Tzivam, the declaration about the completion of creation and God's resting after 6 days of creation. So that's something that's included in the Shmona Esrei, and we say it again out loud in Shul and later in Kiddush. So why is this so important? Amar Rav, v'itamer Rav Yoshua ben Levi. Rav, possibly Rav Yoshua ben Levi, said, Afilu yachid hamitpalal be'erev Shabbat tzarech lomar vayichulu. Even a person that prays by themselves, it sounds like this means, you know, second time, outside of the Shmona Esrei, a person that's praying by themselves on Erev Shabbat has to say vayichulu. Maybe not. I'm not sure if this means outside the Shmona Esrei or inside. Damar Rav Hamnuna, because Rav Hamnuna said, Kol hamit palal be'erev Shabbat. Ve'omer vayichulu, anyone that prays on Erev Shabbat and says vayichulu, ma'ale alav akatuv kilu na'asa shutaf la'kadosh baruch hu v'ma'asa bereshit. So the pasuk regards him as though he has become a partner with God in the creation of the world. Shene'amar vayichulu, and in the Hebrew this becomes totally... I mean, the Gemara has no nikudot, has no punctuation, so you don't see what the word is supposed to be like. It says vayichulu. Don't read it as vayichulu, but read it as vayichulu. It means instead of reading it as vayichulu, they were completed. The heavens and earth were completed. You should read it as vayichalu. They completed, as in two people completed together. Two people completed the heaven and earth together. That is to say that God and the person who's making this declaration are considered as though they created, to some extent, to some degree, the heaven and earth together. We understand, as we'll see described later, that this concept, that you're making a declaration of Vayichulu, is a concept of testimony. I'm testifying that God created the heavens and the earth. I'm being an aid. I'm doing edut. And testimony is done while you're standing. That's the halacha. When you have people that come to testify in a court, they have to stand. So if the reason that we're making this statement is a kind of testimony, and we see how important it is, the Gemara is stressing that everyone should do this because this shows that you're sort of partnering with God by recognizing that this is God who created the world. So if it's a testimony, then you have to say it while you're standing. And since we say this paragraph of Vayichulu again during the Kiddush, this would be a reason to stand during the Kiddush, because we're making a testimony. So far, so good? Okay. So that's one possible reason to stand. Another possible reason to stand is what we see in source 3, which is that there was a practice amongst several of the rabbis in the Talmud to go out and greet the queen, the Shabbat queen, and at the beginning of Shabbat. Amar Rabbi Chanina, bo v'netze likrat kalamalkata. Let's go out to greet the bridal queen, v'amri la likrat Shabbat kalamalkata. Some people say to greet Shabbat the bridal queen. I'm not exactly sure what the difference. It's pretty clear what we're referring to. Let's go out to greet Shabbat. And this, you know, I mean, alongside, you know, many statements in the Zohar, became the practice, the original practice of Kabbalat Shabbat, that you have a sort of institutionalized, a sort of a set way of greeting Shabbat. They used to go out in Tzfat. There's a little courtyard there. And that's what they say. And I don't know these things. I'm sure they're true. But there's a little courtyard near the shul of the Arizal, which is where apparently they used to go out to greet Shabbat. They would go out there, literally go out. Yeah. So if you go, yeah, if it's like a little courtyardy area. So this is this idea, though. This is not something that started in Tzfat. This is something that started much earlier in the Gemara. And certain Amoraim would say, let's go out and greet Shabbat. Rabbi Yanai, mit'ate fekamar bo'ikala bo'ikala. Rabbi Yanai used to not go out, it sounds like. He would cover his head with his talis or something else, a scarf, and he would stand and then say, come, O bride, come, O bride, he would greet the Shabbat in that way. Not, it doesn't sound like he went out of his house. It sounds like he was inside of his house.
This doesn't have to, I mean, one could say that this came about, this is part of Lecha Dodi. So, I mean, we always stand for Lecha, you know, what we call it, but this doesn't necessarily say for Kiddush.
Right, it doesn't say for Kiddush, you're right, and that's a very important point. The way that this is taken by some people is to say that even though we already greeted Shabbat when it actually started, when we were in shul, nevertheless, when we're in our house, you know, it's sort of like a new, it's like a re, you know, I'm doing it again another time. So that also is called the greeting of Shabbat, and therefore it's appropriate to stand. We see that in both cases. One person went out of his house, the other person at least stood in his house. So there's a concept of standing to greet Shabbat. And other people actually say that, no, you did that in shul. Like, you don't have to do that again. That's not what Kiddush is about. Mm-hmm. Kiddush is about whatever else it's about. But it's certainly not about greeting Shabbat. Shabbat started hours ago. Why are you doing it now?
Yeah. Among the explanations you've given so far, there's, like, I always thought that you stand up when you're reciting something that comes from the Sefer Torah. So Yom HaShishi, you know, it's from Sefer Torah. For lunchtime, you know, this doesn't come from the Sefer Torah, so you don't have to give the same kavod that you would for Yom HaShishi.
Right. Very good. So that's coming now. I mean, it's not exactly the same point, but that point is coming right now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So the thing with the bride, could you also use that rule for Shalom Aleichem? Because I know some people stand up for Shalom Aleichem, some sit down for Shalom Aleichem.
I wonder. I'm not sure. The Shalom Aleichem is addressing those two angels, I think. I think that's
right.
The point. They're supposed to accompany
stand
with
stand
you.
Stand
so maybe you
stand
also.
Stand.
We actually sit.
Stand.
But yeah.
I stand.
Yeah, maybe. It could be it's possible that, you know, this is like the angel is coming and you want to show them respect, so you stand up. Yeah. Sounds like it makes sense. I haven't checked to make sure, but that makes sense to me. Okay, so that those are two reasons. So far we have two reasons. One reason has been that you're making this testimony. The other reason is that we are trying to greet Shabbat. And then there's actually a third reason, which is what we sort of mentioned now, is the issue. It's not technically an issue of Sefer Torah, but it's actually issues of names of God. Names of God which are showing up in our story. So this we see here in the Mateh Moshe. I put the dates in because I also didn't know these dates. I'm not very good with dates, so I put the dates in. This is Rabbi Moshe ben Avraham of a town which I will not try and pronounce the name of. Anyone knows how to pronounce things in Polish? The other thing is, you can tell me whatever you want because I have no idea. So I believe
you. Put one
you.
Over there. What do you want?
Good. He was a preeminent sort of posek of Ashkenazi Jews. I think he was lived in Poland and whatever. That I mean, I think it's probably. I'm not sure about Polish history, but he lived in that area, and he wrote a book which covers a lot of issues of minhag, a lot of issues of customs of Ashkenazi Jews. So here he writes about the Kiddush, and he says Mikadosh alakos malayayin. Fine, that we know. You have to make kiddush over a full cup of wine. Umatchil yom hashishi vayichulu hashamayim. And so you, and then you start with the words yom hashishi vayichulu hashamayim, just in source 4. And roshei tevot shem ben arba, because the first letter of each of those words is the first one's yod, the second one is hey, the third one is vav, the fourth one is hey. You actually have hidden here the name of God, yod ke vav ke, in these four words. This creates, and if we have time to talk about it at the end, maybe we will, but this fact that we start Yom HaShishi, if you look at the psukim, these are the two last words of one pasuk, and then you start, you know, actually you have the text. Uh-huh. If you want to look on the second page, it's a little bit dim. I will moment because I will explain why there's all kinds of little numbering and what's going on here. But the first two words are Yom HaShishi, which are totally from somewhere else. And then there's two dots, and then Vayichulu Hashamayim V'aretz V'chol Tzivam is the next pasuk. So there's a rule in Halacha that Kol Pasuk Shelo Pasuk Moshe Rabbeinu Anan Lo Paskinan. Any verse, the verses, the psukim are considered to be set units, and you're not really supposed to recite, depends on the context, a verse which is just like a little chunk of it and not the whole thing. So here, people just say Yom HaShishi, and the whole point is to get in this Yud Kei Vav Kei, to have the name of God there, and that becomes a problem. because you're not supposed to say just two words out of the pasuk. And this creates this idea that even in this version of the Kiddush, it's here, vayihi erev vayihi voker. We add the previous four words from this pasuk in order that this shouldn't be a, you know, verse that you're saying by itself. And actually that is also controversial, because that's still not the beginning of the pasuk. There's actually much more previous to that point. And this becomes a whole separate debate about where you start to say the Kiddush. But the whole point of this whole thing, some people say, and you say it quietly, or do you say the first part quietly or out loud, right? You only say Yom HaShishi out loud. We'll get into the mechanics of that in a moment. But the goal is to have these words Yom HaShishi at the beginning. And this is sort of I believe, a Kabbalistic influence that's going on here, so that you have Yud Kei Vav Kei at the beginning. Good. So that's important. Rosh Tevot Shem Ben Arba. And then, Umilat Vayichulu, Ola Misparo Ayin Bet. The word Vayichulu has a gematria of 72. Remez l'shem shel arba mitgalgel b'tziruf ayin bet, which I don't exactly know what that means, but there is some way in which the four-letter name, in terms of certain permutations, becomes 72. Fine. Lirmoz shebeshem hazen naasu shamayim v'aretz liyot kisei Hashem. This whole thing that you have the yud kei vav kei name and the 72 is to hint at the fact that through this name, through the four-letter name, the earth and the heavens became the throne of God. Which, I'm not at liberty, and by liberty I mean I'm not able to explain that to you. Okay, but the bottom line for us is, V'lachen noagin la'amod b'tchila ad milat ha-shamayim shuhu gamar Hashem. And therefore, we have a practice to stand at the beginning of Kiddush until at least we say ha-shamayim. Yom ha-shishi v'ayichu ha-shamayim, the first four words. Where you complete until we complete the name of God. The cut of a kolbo, this we saw before. So the Matem Moshe says we have a practice to stand only for the first four words of Kiddush, and then everyone sits down afterwards. The kolbo, as we saw before, is not having this. Simon Mem Ayin Shaya Lanu Lekadesh Meumad Lichvod Hamelach Shanu Yotzim Lekrato. We should have stood up to say Kiddush, not actually for this reason of the name of God, but for the previous reason, that as an honor for the king who we are going out to greet, who are actively greeting. Ach lefi she'en kiddush al b'makom se'uda tzarech leishev. At the end of the day, he's a big halachist, and he says that because we want to fulfill this concept of having kiddush wherever we're eating, we should sit di'ikayim v'yativ mechse kichucha v'itilula ad ka'an. But we can't stand up and then start sitting, because that is a mockery, for whatever reason, that's a mockery. But what we see here is a new concept which emerges. Not only are we saying this because of honor of Shabbos, not only is because it's a testimony, because we're reciting the name of God. It's hidden, it's not exactly explicitly the name of God, but since we're reciting this, we have to stand while we're reciting the name of God. Okay, so that we have as well. That's now a third reason.
But in that case, so you're saying after you're saying the Kol Tzavam, you're permitted to sit down?
So according to the Matem Moshe, we're not done yet, but according to the Matem Moshe, that's correct.
But then the third line, you have Hashem's name again. Elohim.
Yeah, so apparently...
I mean, so...
Elohim is not...
That's more obvious, Kiilu, than what's above, right? The other one's more like an acrostic, I guess, for the four words. But this one is so, Hashem's name is right in front of you.
Yeah.
Without being hidden.
That's a fair point. I mean, I would distinguish at the outset between Elohim and the four-letter and Yud Kei Vav Kei. Apparently, this is a specific emphasis on Yud Kei Vav Kei.
But it's not spelled.
But that's not going to help you anyway, because in the second paragraph of the Kiddush, it's full of Yud Kei Vav Keis.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize.
And by the way, it's also in the last line as well.
So there's lots of Yud Kei Vav Keis happening, and I hear that point. Yeah. It seems like there's special emphasis here, specifically on this first hidden concept, the concept that God is the creator of the world, and that through this name, however this name becomes manifest, he becomes the one, the world is turned into his throne, and that specifically, as opposed to other things, is emphasized, at least as far as the Matem Moshe is concerned. Now we're going to see the next expansion is the expansion of the Arizal, where the Arizal will expand and find actually the name of God interspersed or encoded into the entire Kiddush. No, it's explicitly in the Kiddush.
I know
as well.
I'm being a pain here, but just one other point.
Yeah.
The first Yud Kei Vav Kei is also in testimony to Yom HaShishi. It's not testimony to Yom HaShabbat. So I hear what you're saying. I mean, it comes after, but if you want to be true, I mean, it says Vayichor Shemayim, you know, it's for when it says the Yud Vavke that's hidden there, it's in testimony of Yom HaShishi, not of Shabbat.
So I think actually in that case, when we say in Bereishi, when we say Vayir Vayvoker Yom Echad Yom Sheni, it's actually referring to the conclusion of the day. It was night, it was day. That was the first day. Day one is over. It was night, it was day. Day two is over. So now what we're saying is, Yom HaShishi, it was night, it was day, the end of the sixth day, and now the seventh day is starting. Yeah. So there, at least I have an answer. The other point is not as granted. Okay, so here we go. Sefer HaKavanot of Rav Chaim Vital. Rav Chaim Vital here have dates also. He lived in Tzfat, 1542 to 1620. He was a foremost student of the Arizal, and many of the things that we know about what the Arizal thought, we know because they were communicated by Rav Chaim Vital. He wrote a lot of books. I do not have any expertise in these books. I found the citation somewhere, but he wrote a lot of discussions, and what he will find here is that not only in the first four words of the Kiddush do we have the name of God appearing, but in fact the entire Kiddush, if we look at the number of words that exist there, is a reference to the name of God. Okay. How does this emerge? B'sefer HaZohar, Perek Bereshit, Nitbar Beferush. If you look in the Zohar, in Bereshit, it is explicitly stated, Ki yesh ayin tevot, B'sefer, I'm not sure, Seder, I'm not sure exactly what that samach is supposed to be, Vayichulu B'seder Kiddush. There are 70 words in the combination of the section of Vayichulu and in Kiddush, in the Kiddush part afterwards. Lamed hei tevot by Vayichulu, V'lamed hei tevot b'kiddush. There are 35 words in the Vayichulu paragraph and 35 in the Kiddush. If you don't believe this, if you look at the picture that I included, part of the reason why I included it in the second page, this is a picture which is from the Siddur of the Chasam Sofer. He made a Siddur which includes many of his opinions and his practices, and I flipped it open because I wanted to see what he would say about Kiddush, and I saw, interestingly, that they here numbered all the words in each of the paragraphs. So you see that in the top paragraph there are 35 words, and in the bottom paragraph there are 35 words minus these words which are in brackets. So this which raises now another controversy. You see, everything ends up getting sucked in. All the issues about Kiddush get sucked into this discussion of whether or not you're supposed to stand. You have the words Kihu Yom, Tchila LaMikrei Kodesh, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, and also Kivanu V'charta V'otanu Kidashta Mikol Ha'amim. These words are in brackets. They appear in brackets in many different, I don't know what they are. If they're in the art scroll, Siddur in brackets, does anyone know?
I don't think they are.
They're not in brackets? They're not in there at all?
No, they're in there at all. They're not in brackets.
They're not in brackets. They just explicitly say that. Yeah? Should we check? I'd be interested to know, because we'll see there's three different views on what you're supposed to say here. But the issue is that these words, if you add them in, obviously boost you over 35 words in each section. You're going to have... And then you're going to lose your balance of having 70 words, and that's a problem.
But I failed to see what's so important about 35.
It's not the 35. It's the 35 plus the 35 is 70.
Yeah.
And 70, the Zohar says, we didn't see 70 yet, but 70, the Zohar says that Shabbos is crowned with 70 crowns. Mm. What does it say here? Ki hu yom. No brackets. Just do it. Okay, well, this is the RCA one. I wonder if it's like the Sniffer version. Okay, anyway, fine. So that they don't mention. Good. Okay, so they just put it in. It's the same way in the Siddur, which is used in the... in Kala.Yeshurun, the rehearsed Siddur. I have a copy of that at home also. That's what it's like. But as you can see, if you're going to add in these extra words, you're going to get over 70. 70 is a significant number in terms of the Zohar's view of Shabbat, that Shabbat was crowned with 70 crowns. And also, if you have the 70 words, and then you add Yom HaShishi at the beginning, then we get up to 72, which we already saw was a significant number of words. And in that sense, what has been pointed out here, there's a rabbi in Israel named Rabbi Daniel Sperber. He teaches, I think, in Bar Ilan. He has a very good book about Minhagim. Part of it was translated into English. This is a quote. I mean, I pulled this out of his Hebrew version of his book, but he has an English version called "Why Jews Do What They Do," which is bears a striking resemblance to the title of this class. And I wonder if I think he published it before this year. So I will let him off the hook.
So I'll let you off the hook.
Yeah, I guess actually. So, yeah. I don't know if he holds a license in Canada. Okay, well, whatever. But the point is, he points out that what's actually happening here is we're transforming. Not only are the first four words encoded with the name of God, but actually all the words and the whole thing, the entire thing is in some way a reference to the name of God, which may lead us to stand for the entire time. He fleshes out this point about the extra words. So let's look at that first, and then we'll come back to that previous point. Lachen otam hanoagim lomar achar tevot zecher letziat Mitzrayim ki vanu vacharta ve'otanu kidashta mikol ha'amim v'shabbat kodshecha v'chulu. Those who have the minhag to say after the word zecher letziat Mitzrayim ki vanu vacharta, etc., those people are making a mistake. That's a total, it's completely wrong. Everyone knows, the Zohar says there have to be exactly 70 words in Kiddush. How can you add extra words? You will mess up the number of words that are supposed to be there. Mosifin b'cheshbon atevot. Ve'ein lomar seder girsa zu, ela b'kiddush al yom tov bilvad. Where does this come from, these extra words? Ki banu b'charto v'tanu kiddashta mikol amim. That is from the Kiddush of Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, we're not worried about this concept of having the name of God in the Kiddush. That's only on Shabbos. And therefore, there it's fine. V'hatoim he'etikuhu misham b'seder kiddush al Shabbat. And the people that made the mistake, these people who made this mistake, they copied it over here from the story from the Kiddush of Yom Tov, but it doesn't belong here. And you should get rid of those words and not include them, because you're going to end up over 35.
Obviously, his opinion lost.
In the Nusach of the Arizal, these were, do we have, maybe there's one in here.
Oh, look at this show.
There's always one. Well, there's always a couple everywhere. It doesn't matter what shul you're in. There's a couple Chabad Siddur. Isn't there like a Chabad school in this building? Okay, whatever. We don't have to. I don't want to make anyone crazy.
Probably it's back on the right one.
I don't
want to
make anyone crazy, but if it was here, it would be fascinating. I didn't look it up.
Probably the bottom right, Michael.
If it says open at your own risk, you know, that's.
But if you will check there, we'll see. Okay, you don't have to make yourself free. Okay, whatever. But if you will check there, the Nusach of the Arizal is not to include these words. We also have the word Kihu Yom bracketed out, just as an aside here. You see there's two sections of bracketed out words. So Reb Chaim Vital wants to get rid of Kivanu Vacharta Ve'otanu Kidashta Mikol Ha'amim, those words. There's also these extra three words, Kihu Yom. The Vilna Gaon, the reason why those words are in brackets, because the Vilna Gaon says those are extra and they're grammatically incorrect. They shouldn't be there. I mean, this is not a Kabbalistic thing. This is a grammar thing. If you just translate the words here, Shabbat Kocho Ba'avar Ratzon Hin Chaltanu, he gave his holy Shabbos to us with love and with desire. Zikaron, and then there's a series of three things. Zikaron L'Maaseh Bereishit, it is a memory for the creation, the action of creating the world. Tchilala Mikrei Kodesh, it's the first of the holy days. Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim, and it's also in memory of Mitzrayim. The words Kihu Yom there break up this continuity of three, because it is a day. We already know we're talking about. We're talking about Shabbos. And apparently in the Nusach of the Rambam, if you look, the Rambam records what kind of Kiddush he would say. He does not have the words Kihu Yom. And therefore, the Vilna Gaon omits Kihu Yom because it's wrong grammatically. But he includes Kibanu Bacharta. He doesn't have an issue with that. The Chaim Vital, and presumably the Arizal, omit the Kibanu Bacharta, and presumably also Kihu Yom, because you're going to have more than 35 words. Okay. So that... Pardon?
It's seven words. Is that significant?
The fact that it's seven extra words?
Seven Shabbat, I don't know.
Could be. I can't tell you.
I like it much.
Okay, so it's seven words, but the seven extra words are, yeah, maybe it's like 72 words plus seven words for Shabbos. I don't know.
But Doug, I don't know if Rabbi, the guy who came from Yom Kippur for every year, he gave a whole drush about seven. And throughout the whole thing, Shabbat, no matter what you're talking about, food, talking about prayers, talking about everything, it's all seven. I mean, seven plus zero, anyway.
Okay, so there's lots of sevens going on. Here we're interested more in 70 and 72. And even the bottom line is here that Reb Chaim Vital ends up, what ends up happening, as Rabbi Sperber notes, is that we took this concept of standing, because you're mentioning the name of God is encoded into the words Yom HaShishi Vayichulu HaShemayim, and that became expanded into the entire Kiddush. The whole Kiddush is a giant hint for the 72-letter name of God, or the way that the four-letter name restructures itself into 72 letters, and therefore you should stand not only for the first part of Kiddush, but for the entire Kiddush afterwards. That's what you should do. Okay, so that sort of creates it's the third reason for standing. If we just want to recap this, we had three reasons basically for standing. One reason was because you're testifying, you're making a testimony about Shabbat. The second reason is because you're standing up to greet Shabbat. You're standing up to greet Shabbat Malkata. The third reason is because the name of God, and as we pointed out, maybe the name of God that's encoded is better for this than the name of God which is explicit. But the name of God is encoded into the first four words of the Kiddush, and maybe into the entire Kiddush itself, and therefore, to a varying degree, insofar as we're concerned about that, we stand either for the beginning or the whole thing. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of people who stand up for the first bracha on Pesach, on the Haggadah, in that case? I mean, I don't see it anywhere in the explanations, but you would think that, you know, that's the testimony of Yitziat Mitzrayim. That would be so critical.
Bracha?
Well, the first Kiddush you make.
The Kiddush, that's about Pesach. I have not heard anybody standing up for it.
I mean, I don't know anybody who would, but I'm just wondering if...
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same...
At the same?
Yeah.
People stand?
I'm just asking. I wouldn't know.
I'm not surprised about anyone standing or sitting at any time at this point.
You stand up for every Kiddush.
Yeah, but it also tells you which way to lean, so it assumes you're already sitting there.
That's about the four questions.
This
is the Kiddush before. Kaddish.
Right.
First Kiddush Rechat before.
Yeah, I'm not aware. It could be because there's a special reference to Vayichulu in terms of this being a testimony. Yeah. As we'll see, it's about to be disputed.
And by the way,
the fact that this is even about a testimony at all is going to be, someone's going to take it to the chopping block.
And maybe if it's read by the Baal Haggadah, maybe because that person would be the one standing up anyway.
It could be
natural for him to stand.
In any event, what we see emerging here...
Go to hell.
Is that we... No, well, the good thing about this is, whatever you do is fine. No, it's not true. That's not true. That's not how this works. But there is somebody that says that you should do whatever you do. I'll put it that way. That's what we're going to shift to talking about now. What exactly do... How is this done? So we have reasons why we might sit. We want to create a setting, a set situation where everyone is kavu at the table so that the person that's making Kiddush can make it for everyone effectively. We are concerned about the possibility of Kiddush from Makom Suda. And three reasons to stand is testimony, greeting Shabbat is a concept where we should stand, and also, to a lesser or greater degree, the name of God, which is encoded inside of the brachas. How was this actually done, practically speaking, in the past? Do we have any indication what people used to do in the times of the Rishonim earlier? So I didn't quote here, but this would have been in between this source and source number 6, is Rashi. Rashi didn't write this directly, but many of Rashi's students wrote different books about Rashi's practices. One of them is called Sefer HaPardes.
Are they from Totafot?
That group of people. There's another famous one called Machzer Vitri, whatever. There are people who recorded some of his practices. So he was one, and you find this in general amongst the school of the Baalei Tosfot, who emphasized this notion that when we're saying Vayichulu, the point is that we're testifying. I'm making a testimony. I told it to you, and hopefully you didn't take it for granted. But that's how they interpret this concept of saying Vayichulu, that it's a testimony. And so Rashi says, or they say in the name of Rashi, that even though you said this already in Shul, and it was already done in Shul, because of the chiba for the Eidud, you have so much love for this notion that you're testifying, that when you come home, you want to do it again. And therefore, people stand and say Vayichulu, and then they say Kiddush. It's not exactly clear from his language, which we don't have, so it's hard for you. You'll have to take my word for this, on this. But it's not clear from his language if he meant that you should be standing the whole time, or if he meant we stand for Vayichulu, maybe the whole paragraph of Vayichulu, and then subsequently we're going to sit down. Those are two possibilities. But we see that in terms of Rashi's school, there is a concept of standing. Good. Shibole Haleket, which is Rav Tzidkia ben Avraham from Rome, he was trained, I mean, in Rome, but also he went to Germany, to Ashkenaz, to be trained amongst the Ashkenazi rabbis as well. And he also mentions this concept of standing, and then his brother, who's Rav Binyamin ben Avram Anav, he quotes his brother, who attacks this whole notion that this has anything to do with testimony. So if we look in the Shibboleth Aleka, Nagu l'omro b'amida, the custom was to say the Vayichulu section at least while standing. He's talking about shul now. He's not talking about kiddush. He's talking about shul. We do that in shul. In shul, we finish Shmona Esrei, and the structure there is that we have Shmona Esrei, and then everyone, you know, it's like you have to be ready on time. Everyone says Vayichulu together, and then there's the sections which turn into the Bracha Me'ein Sheva, which is the seven-faceted Bracha that we say on the night of Shabbat as a sort of quasi-repetition of the Shmona Esrei, and then everyone's standing anyway, and then you finish davening. Okay, so that's, we do stand. V'atam matzati b'shem Rabbeinu Shlomo Zal. I found in the name of Rabbeinu Shlomo of Rashi, lefi masha amru ha'omer v'yechulu be'erev Shabbat meid l'kadosh baruch hu shabara ma'asa bereshit. It's based on what Chazal said, that one who recites v'yechulu on Erev Shabbat is testifying to God that he created the world. Now, it's not clear if he's quoting the Gemara that we mentioned at the beginning, because if you recall, it didn't say that. It just says, whoever says this is like a partner with God for creating the world. It didn't say anything about testimony. Here, he says clearly somewhere, Chazal said that it's like testimony. So once we're saying that this is real testimony, we hold that testifying has to be done while you're standing. Kedichtiv, v'ya'amdu shnei ha'anashim be'edim. The two people got up, that's talking about witnesses. When you testify, you have to stand. Okay, so that's the idea that we have from Rashi. And then, Achi, Rabbi Binyamin, Katav, that's not true, it just happens to be this way. Mashanagu lomar ba'amida, lefish achshav simu tfilat lachash, venimtzin omdin. The reason why this is done when you're standing is very boring. It's because everyone's standing anyway. I finished Shmona Esrei, and in a minute I'm going to have to stand up again when the chazan gets to the seven. I know that translation is from the article. The seven faceted blessing. We get into the bracha main shev, I'm going to have to stand again. So why would I bother sitting down now? I'll just keep standing. It's another few seconds, and there's no problem, and I'll continue to stand. But there's actually no reason why this is said specifically while standing. The lo mitam edut has nothing to do with testimony. The haomer oto meyushav lo hifsid. Someone that says it's sitting didn't miss out on anything. And we can prove this from the kiddush of the daytime, which is recited while you're sitting. However, it's inappropriate to overstep the bounds of one's predecessors, of Rashi. He has deference to Rashi. But yeah,
but he's just saying this is like, he's just declaring this like coincidence.
Yeah.
I mean,
some things actually aren't
really answer anything.
I mean, it helps us in terms of kiddush, right? We know why they're doing it in shul. In shul, they're standing because you're standing anyway. Sometimes you're just standing anyway. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't say this.
Rather than sit down for a short period of time, just remain standing.
Right. That's it. I'm just standing. There's no reason. There's not always, you know, here, you know, in this class, we always try to find the reason. Sometimes there's no reason. He says there's no reason. There's no reason for doing this, why people stand. And therefore, it follows through. He brings the example from Kiddush during the day. So it's not clear if that means he thinks they said Vayichulu in the Kiddush during the day. It sounds like it. But in Kiddush during the day, we say it and we don't stand. Presumably, anytime you say Kiddush, he doesn't feel like you have to stand. So there's no problem with sitting down. I don't know what he did. It's not clear because he, you know, he's quoting his brother. Maybe his brother did this. But we see that at least there was a sort of push amongst certain people to say this concept of testifying is not a thing, and I'm going to sit, and there's no problem, and I will just sit the whole time, and there's no issue. What that was in the school of Rashi.
Why it's a bit problematic here is because the one explanation you gave is that you would say the bracha where you intend to have your meal. So, you know, if on Friday night when you're in shul,
mm-hmm.
You don't sit because while reciting Kiddush, because you're not at the point where you're going to be having your meal, so you're just saying, you're just declaring it in Kiddush. But it makes it sound like the prime reason why you would either sit or stand is happen to be where you are at that time.
So I think the distinction is in shul on Friday night. I'm not sure we're not making Kiddush. This is just part of the davening. We do make Kiddush also,
we do.
Maybe. But that's not what he's referring to here. He's referring to the part of when we say this right after the silent Shmona Esrei, everyone breaks into Vayichulu.
Yeah, but right before Aleinu, I mean.
That's true. Right before Aleinu, we do say Kiddush.
Right.
But I think that we're saying that these two things are distinct.
But that's only the Ashkenaz say it. And the reason they say, because the people...
What?
And it's only the second month.
No. Right, but it's only said because in certain times, there were people that came to the shul and ate in the shul.
Right. So you are raising an important point.
That's what he said for.
And there is a discussion about that. If you're going to have people... I saw it on the forum for the Kal Adas Yishruin, like shul, mm-hmm. the Yeki shul in Washington Heights. So they had this discussion. We say Kiddush and shul at night. Nobody really is using this Kiddush. Right. There's a whole mystery about why we still say it. The Gemara says you should say it for people that are eating in the shul.
Right.
So they said, well, but based on what we've seen here, you have to sit during Kiddush because that shows that the Kiddush is for you. You're attaching yourself to the one that's saying it. Mm. So nobody does that. No, it's not for anyone, but they were thinking about maybe having guests that would eat in the shul. Maybe those people should actually have to sit down. So it's a good point that you're raising. But he seems to be saying, yeah, we say this standing up. The same reason we say Kiddush standing up in shul. Could you sit down during that Kiddush? I guess so. There's no reason why, but everyone's standing anyway. It's literally the same kind of example. You're in between the completion of the davening and Aleinu.
Yeah.
And why would I sit down now? You could sit down, I think.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of argument that he's making. So we see even within the school of Rashi, where this concept of testifying was really important, not everybody agreed. What about other Rishonim? So some people try and bring a proof here from this case in the Rambam. The Rambam, this is in the halachas of sukkah, which of all places. So what's going on here? When you go into a sukkah to sit down, the Rambam understands that the mitzvah, it seems, is accomplished, or at least it's clearly accomplished, when you literally sit down inside of the sukkah. And therefore, since you're supposed to make a bracha before you complete a mitzvah, you should make the bracha of leishev b'sukkah, and then sit down. We don't do that.
Yeah, but the kiddushos were said before.
Right, so he's saying here, what's going on? Anytime that you enter the sukkah during the entire holiday, you first make a bracha and then you sit down. Before you sit down, you make the bracha. So then how does this work in terms of Kiddush? Ubelele yom tov harishon mevarech al hasukkah vavarka achar kach mevarech al hazman. On the first night of Yom Tov, you make a bracha on the sukkah, and then you make Shechayanu, but that's only after the Kiddush, and all of this has to be done over wine. So what does that mean? When we add it together, Nimsa Mekadesh Me'umad, what we find is that you're supposed to make Kiddush while you're standing, Umevarech Leshev B'sukkah, and then you make a bracha of Leshev B'sukkah, V'yoshev V'acharkach Mevarech Al Hazman. And then, so it's like a whole thing for the Rambam. You come in, you're standing, you make Kiddush, you make the bracha to sit in the sukkah, you sit down, and then you make Shechayanu. Good. V'chazeh haya minhag rabutei v'rabanei Sfarad. This was the practice of the rabbis of Spain, of the Sephardi communities, l'kadesh me'umad b'leil rishon shel chag ha-sukkot k'mo shebi'arnu. They would make Kiddush standing up on the first night of Sukkot, as we have explained. So some people want to argue from here that by way of implication, it sounds like the Rambam is saying that in general, we would never make Kiddush standing up. You make Kiddush standing up on Sukkot because there's a special reason, because I need to stand up before I make the bracha. But generally speaking, I would be sitting the whole time.
It sounds like why you stand up for that on Sukkot is because the second layeshev basukkah is you have to be sitting down.
No, you have to say the bracha before you sit down.
Oh.
That's according to... We don't do... This is not how we pass it. We don't hold this way. But the Rambam has this rule that you... I would quote here, there's little notes on the Rambam from the Ravid, his arch nemesis there, and the Ravid says, what are you talking about? It doesn't mean... Leishiv b'sukkah doesn't mean I sit down in the sukkah. It means I'm dwelling in the sukkah. I'm eating there. I'm sleeping there. It doesn't mean that you should say the bracha before you mechanically sit down. But that's what the Rambam says. Yeah. Okay, it literally means to sit in the sukkah. Great. So it sounds like from here, but there's a little bit to debate there because, as we'll see, as we'll mention in a moment, none of these rules, and we saw already in Rav Chaim Vital, that these rules don't apply on Yom Tov. The standing thing may not apply at all on Yom Tov. So the Rambam may just be talking about, as opposed to every other Yom Tov where we sit during Kiddush, maybe on Shabbos he did stand, but on Yom Tov maybe not. It's not clear.
Unless it's an Ashkenaz part thing.
I don't know. So let's cut down to the bottom of the line here. We'll read the Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll discuss what exactly do people do. We've seen the background. We've seen all the reasons. We've seen a little bit of the historical reality. We know that some of the standing was going on, at least to a certain extent. It sound, maybe from the Rambam you can see that people weren't standing. Maybe he was sitting. What do people actually do at the end of the day? So if we look in Source 9, we'll look at that before 8. Source 9 is the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Now the Shulchan Aruch says, Mekadesh al kos male yayin, you make a bracha on a full cup of wine, va'omer vayichulu ma'umad, then you say the paragraph of vayichulu ma'umad, va'acharkach omer b'rei pri gafen, va'acharkach chidush. And then it's ambiguous. You say vayichulu while you're standing, and then you say b'rei pri gafen, and then you say kiddush. So this has been interpreted in two ways. In terms of how, what camp he falls into, I saw one person interpret this as saying that you're supposed to stand the entire time. And at least according to, it's Rabbi Eli Mansour from, he has a shul in New York, I believe. He said the minhag of Spardim is to stand the entire Kiddush. Which is parallel to the minhag of the Arizal that we saw, and I didn't check to see if Hasidim what they do, but it's very plausible that they also follow the minhag of the Arizal, and so, therefore they would be standing. In fact, I was once for Shabbos with the Chassidish Rebbe, and if I'm not mistaken, he stood the entire time. So that camp, that view, the Arizal, the Sephardi minhag, and the Chassidish minhag, I imagine, for the greater part, except maybe Lubavitch, stand the entire time for Kiddush at night. We stand the whole time, and this is based on this notion that we have the names of God encoded into the bracha and all the other reasons that we would stand. That's one view. The other way that this statement of the Shulchan Aruch was read is that he means you should stand during Vayichulu, the paragraph of Vayichulu, and then you should sit for the rest of the paragraphs. This was something we saw mentioned before, standing a little bit, sitting a little bit. Some people thought this was a mockery, but this is a possibility. And then the sitter of Rav Yaakov Emdin, who I will not tell you, pretend that I will guess the dates properly, but he wrote a sitter which has a comprehensive, it's really for Ashkenazim, but he has a view on what to do, and that's also his opinion, that you're supposed to stand for Vayichulu, for that paragraph, and then sit. And so many people do that. And it creates a compromise, because I'm standing in terms of greeting Shabbat, I'm standing in terms of the name of God, at least at the beginning, I'm standing because when I make the paragraph, which is the testimony, Vayichulu, and then I sit for the rest of it, and then I get the benefits of sitting for the rest of it. That's the second view. The third view, with even less, slightly less sitting, is mentioned here in the Ramah. The Ramah says, Hagav vayachola amod b'shat ha-kiddush. You could stand. V'yoter tov leishev. But it's better, he cites the kolbo that we saw before, it's better just to sit. V'no'agim leishev af b'shash omer vayachulu. And many people, our custom in Ashkenaz is to sit even while you say the paragraph of Vayichulu, don't worry. Rak shematchilin omdim ktsat lichvod Hashem. Ki matchilin, I bolded the letters for you, Yom HaShishi Vayichulu HaShemayim, v'nirmaz Hashem b'rashay teva. When we start, as we saw before in the Matei Moshe and other places, since we have the name of God encoded in the first four words of the Kiddush, so we stand for that, and you sit down for the rest of it. So the Ramah says the Ashkenazi practice was to only stand for the first four words and sit down for the rest of it. And so that's a third possibility. And the final possibility is quoted here in the Vilna Gaon, which is in Source 8, which is simply to sit the entire time. He says, Mekadesh Meyushav. You sit down for the entire Kiddush. Then he mentions that you skip these words, Ki Hu Yom, rather. I just added that in. Medalik Shloshu Tevu Ki Hu Yom. You skip those three words. So that's basically the range of practice. Either you stand the whole time, you still have to sit down before you drink the wine. That's a separate discussion. Or you stand for Vayichulu, the first half, and you sit down for the second half. That's done. I mean, I don't know exactly who does what. I think different communities have taken on different things. The mainstream Ashkenazi, I don't know if it's mainstream, but according to the Ramah at least, is to stand for the first four words and sit down for the rest. And the Vilna Gaon says, just sit the whole time, and you don't stand up at all. Two things which come out of this: what about the daytime Kiddush, and what about Yom Tov? So daytime Kiddush does not have in it any of the factors which would lead you to stand. You don't say Yom HaShishi, you're not greeting Shabbat. At this point, you're really not greeting Shabbat. It's halfway through the day. You're really not. The name of God... Pardon? That's true. You are making a proclamation that it is Shabbat, but in terms of going out to greet the beginning of Shabbos, you know, I think that at that point people are assuming that, you know, it's like it's been done already. At this point, it's Shabbos now. You don't have to greet it. You're making a declaration. This is Shabbat today. That's true. You're not saying the paragraph of Vayichulu, though, the paragraph which is the testimony. So none of the, all of those reasons fall away. And therefore, there is good grounds to say that you even if you stand at night, there's no reason to stand during the day. There are still people who stand during the day anyway.
Really?
I believe so. I don't remember who said
where. One?
There are those who have the custom to stand during the day.
Do you stand up?
Well, yes. In terms of
we drink sitting down. Sure, but that's because you're right.
But we drink sitting down.
And then in terms of Yom Tov, so Yom Tov also doesn't have any of these reasons. You don't say Yom HaShishi. You don't have Vayichulu. You're not greeting Shabbos. So there, people have less. Some people still stand, and some people have a tendency to sit. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein said that if you're standing during Yom Tov, you should try and figure out what the actual minhag is, because it's not so clear why people are saying, but people do it anyway. That's what Ramosh Feinstein said. It's not what everybody says.
What did Rome do? Is it Rome?
Yeah. I don't know what they do in Rome. That's a good question. So those are some. So again, just to wrap this up, we had this question of whether you should stand or sit. We saw that there are several halakhic reasons to stand, and several other, you know, more, I don't call them pseudo halakhic, but other reasons that you might want to sit. You might want to. Sorry, the opposite. There's a couple of halakhic reasons, technical halakhic reasons you might want to sit. Some a little bit more meaningful reasons why you might want to stand to greet Shabbat and to honor the name of God, and so on. And we also saw how some of this panned out in the medieval period when people were doing this in the times of the Rishonim, and we came up with four different practices that people have today.
Wow.